Welcome to the Nonsensical Nation, where the thing that we used to call common sense is alive and well. So today I want to talk about the separation of church and state. Sounds rather bland, but it is extremely important. We're seeing it play out every single day with this coronavirus stuff going on. Now we realize that it's okay to protest, but you better not go to church. It is so blatant how anti-religious this government is. Well, at least many of the leaders are. Not all, thank heavens. The doctrine of separation of church and state is responsible for the mess that we find ourselves in right now. And those of you that listen to my other podcast, Fact Checking Darwin, probably wonder, what's an emergency physician doing talking about the legal system? Well, it's probably because I'm a physician that I talk about the legal system. I learned early on, what you do not know will absolutely hurt you sooner or later. And the fact of it is, lawyers run this country. They run our lives. When I say lawyers, I'm talking about judges and, frankly, most politicians, or at least politicians who are the more elitist type. Those of you who have jobs that are similar to more systematic type jobs, which is about everything, accountants, medicine, plumbers, you name it. Those of us who use deductive reasoning, i.e., we take a premise, you get evidence, you look at all the evidence, and then you reach a conclusion to finish your job. Lawyers go the exact opposite. They want a specific conclusion, i.e., you're guilty or you're innocent, then they reach back and find evidence and premises that support that conclusion. So lawyers do not think like the rest of us. And I decided a long time ago, I want to figure out how lawyers think. And I actually obtained a law degree for that purpose. I never wanted to practice law, but I figured you better know what's going on, or you're going to pay the price. So I got a law degree from Concord Law School. And okay, big disclaimer, I am not a lawyer and I do not give legal advice, but I do know what's going on. And I want to share that with you in this specific instance with the separation of church and state. As a doctrine, the separation of church and state represents not just an assault on Christianity, it also provides a template that illustrates just how judicial activism is destroying this country. Lawyers and judges manipulate the English language. They pervert the legal system when they decide to become social engineers, and we see an awful lot of social engineering going on now. The separation of church and state is a perfect example of how this is done. This doctrine has betrayed the U.S. Constitution. Lawyers and judges have defrauded the citizens. And the doctrine has mutated from what it was meant to be, which was a protection of religious freedoms from the state into protection of the state from religion. If you think I'm being overly dramatic, I want you to listen to Supreme Court Justices Scalia and Rehnquist. So there's going to be a lot of quoting in this podcast, but I'll certainly warn you. Rehnquist wrote a dissent in Wallace v. Jaffrey, and very eloquently he summarized everything that is wrong with the separation of church and state doctrine. Quote, "It is impossible to build sound constitutional doctrine upon a mistaken understanding of constitutional history, but unfortunately the Establishment Clause has been expressly freighted with Jefferson's misleading metaphor for nearly 40 years. It seems indisputable from these glimpses of Madison's thinking, as reflected by actions on the floor of the House in 1789, that he saw the amendment as designed to prohibit the establishment of a national religion and perhaps to prevent discrimination among sects. He did not see it as requiring neutrality on the part of the government between religion and irreligion. Thus, the court's opinion in Everson is totally incorrect in suggesting that Madison carried these views onto the floor of the United States House of Representatives when he proposed the language which would ultimately become the Bill of Rights. The repetition of this error in the court's opinion in Illinois McCollum v. Board of Education and Ingalls v. Vitale does not make it any sounder historically. Stare decisis, which is the legal doctrine of precedent, it literally means to stand by things that have already been decided, may bind courts as to matters of law, but it cannot bind them as to matters of history. End quote. That's pretty long, but it's absolutely 100% correct. So, not surprisingly, Rehnquist isn't alone with this. In the opinion of Lee versus Wiseman, Justice Scalia writes the following dissent. Quote, in holding that the Establishment Clause prohibits invocations and benedictions at public school graduation ceremonies, the court, with nary a mention that it is doing so, lays waste a tradition that is as old as public school graduation ceremonies themselves, and that is a component of an even more long-standing American tradition of non-sectarian prayer to God at public celebrations generally. As its instrument of destruction, the bulldozer of its social engineering, the court invents a boundless and boundlessly manipulable test of psychological coercion. Today's opinion shows more forcefully than volumes of argumentation why our nation's protection, that fortress which is our Constitution, cannot possibly rest upon the changeable philosophical predilections of the justices of this court, but must have deep foundations in the historic practices of our people. End quote. So there is the term social engineering. And if these two Supreme Court justices are so vehemently opposed to what's been going on, then it makes one wonder, how did this travesty happen in the first place? I believe there are three basic steps towards any judicial activism. And this doctrine is perfect at demonstrating how this is done. Number one, find a philosophical zealot who is highly placed in the government. Two, usurp the powers of the states in order to have uniform central control. And then three, invent a legal fiction on which to base new doctrine. So in this case, we got step one, find a philosophical zealot who is highly placed in government. Voila. Here comes the chief architect of this disaster, Justice Hugo Black. As one can well imagine, Justice Black was possessed of some serious bias. And once again, I don't want you to take my word for it, but I'm going to make you listen to another quote again. And this one is actually from his own son, Hugo Black Jr. And I quote again. The Ku Klux Klan and Daddy, so far as I could tell, had one thing in common. He suspected the Catholic Church. He used to read all of Paul Blanchard's books exposing the power abuse in the Catholic Church. He thought the Pope and the bishops had too much power and property. He resented the fact that rental property owned by the church was not taxed. He felt they got most of their revenue from the poor and did not return enough of it. The perfect little social engineer. It is quite clear that the architect of the separation of church and state was a bigot and held strong resentment against the church. And this is the man who created legal doctrine that regulates how all Americans are supposed to deal with religion. So how did he do it? Well, first, we need to understand where we came from to get to his new social engineered understanding of religion. The Free Exercise Clause was originally understood by what was called the Secular Regulation Rule. This rule did not prohibit the free exercise of religion. So not prohibiting free exercise of religion means three things. One, the federal government could not impose religious beliefs on anyone. The federal government could not compel people to engage in religious practices contrary to their conscientious beliefs. And three, the federal government could not, on religious grounds, prevent people from acting on their religious beliefs. That's how it used to be, but that changed. And this gets us to step two. Usurp the powers of the states in order to have uniform central control. Simply put, progressives within the federal government have assimilated and usurped the power of the states. Once the state's distinctive individuality had been absorbed into the federal collective, the newly empowered federal government could set about establishing new morals, new ethics, and goals, creating all sorts of new powers. Barton explains that Black succeeded in creating a new definition of wall of separation and then mandated that this new definition would forevermore be applied to all cases in all states dealing with religion. So more quotes. He notes in Everson that the phrase separation, requiring the federal government to remove expressions from the public arena. This is obviously the complete opposite of the First Amendment's meaning, and progressives are not finished usurping power and centralizing control. We're seeing it every single day with this coronavirus crap. Daily, we see the Progressive Party on a forced march to collectivism and the centralization of power. And this leads us to step three, invent a legal fiction on which to base a new doctrine. And this is how the dirty work is actually done, how the manipulation that the justices talk about is actually done, and it's pretty sneaky. Justice Black was not only the political zealot that the progressives needed to push the narrative, he also did the hard work of inventing the legal fiction. Justice Black invented the obscure metaphor from a letter written by Thomas Jefferson. And when I say invented, you probably can use the word manipulated and tortured. Jefferson wrote to the Baptist community of Danbury, Connecticut, who expressed their fears that because the protection for religion had been written into the laws and the Constitution, it would inappropriately suggest that the government viewed freedom of religion as a government-granted right rather than a God-granted right. Now, I mean, how silly could they be, right? The Danbury Baptists were apprehensive that the government might someday wrongly believe that it had the power to regulate public religious activities. Well, lo and behold, that is exactly what happened. The overly dramatic Danbury Baptists were right all along. And ironically, Jefferson attempted to assuage their fears of the Danbury Baptists by assuring them that the government would not and could not interfere with their religious freedoms. So here we're going to get to another quote. And this is actually the quote that gave Black his words to manipulate. But of course, you never hear the whole thing. You only hear the very last part. But it begins, quote, "Believing with you that religion is a matter which lies solely between man and his God, that he owes account to none other for his faith or his worship, that the legitimate powers of government reach actions only and not opinions, I contemplate with sovereign reverence that the act of the whole American people, which declared that their legislature should make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting free exercise thereof," and this is the part, "thus building a wall of separation between church and state," end quote. This wall of separation of church and state was clearly meant to be a wall of non-interference. And this was obviously stated by Jefferson. As Barton summarizes again, and I'll give you a list of these people that I'm quoting in essentially a bibliography. He summarizes, "Now the First Amendment is no longer a limitation on government interference. It is now a limitation on religious expression and principles." Justice Black manipulated Jefferson's words. Black's malfeasance stands as possibly our nation's most egregious example of an attack on Christianity and misuse of the legal system. And this is how he did it. Barton summarizes it again, and here's another quote. Quote, "Furthermore, the court did not give the context of the phrase or Jefferson's numerous other statements on the subject. In fact, it did not even mention that the previous Supreme Courts had used Jefferson's letter to preserve religious principles in public society rather than remove them. In short, that 1947 court was the first to divorce Jefferson's metaphor from its context and then apply it in a manner exactly opposite to Jefferson's clearly articulate intent," end quote. It's really frustrating to listen to lawyers and judges and politicians and journalists talk about the separation of church and state as if it is some intellectual masterpiece. What it is a masterpiece of propaganda and obscenity. And they think we're so ignorant that we'll go along with it. But there it is, and that's where we are. But I suppose there's no sense of being too frustrated. It just increases your blood pressure, gives you ulcers. So in conclusion, progressive irrationally fear that Christians are these militant theocrats who are plotting to initiate a national theocratic coup. But what they don't comprehend, which is the reality of the situation, is that Christians and those of religious right are merely engaging in a defensive stand to halt the secularization of society and the infringement of these rights. I want to leave you with one last quote. Imagine that. This is the podcast of quotes. I know they're grueling, but this is actually from Hilmar von Campe, a Hitler youth and a soldier who wrote a book called How Was It Possible? The Story of a Hitler Youth and a Vital Analysis for Today's Times. You know, essentially, the world has seen the horror that occurs when God is removed from society. And you can find countless examples of this all over the place. But I think this horror is summarized best by von Campe, who grew up the Hitler Youth, fought against the Red Army in Yugoslavia as a tank gunner, and then escaped from a prisoner of war camp in communist Yugoslavia. So this guy, who's been there, he's seen it, and I think he knows. He says, quote, "Godlessness was the principal reason for the crimes of the Nazi leaders. Nothing in this world will last if it is not anchored in truth. The principle of truth is the same for all men and nations, regardless of color, race, class, or religion. Everyone and every nation is expected and has the capacity to live in truth. Humanity's critical challenge of the hour is that of reconciling our innermost motives, those of each individual human being, with the charge and mission with which God has endowed our human natures." End quote. You know, he was talking about Nazi Germany, what happened to the world, and we're in the same situation now. This nation is rapidly becoming godless. And I hate to say it, but the lawyers, judges, politicians, journalists are happy and thrilled that we are removing God from public discourse. So if you weren't frustrated enough, I hope you're not more so after this, but I just wanted to get that off my chest. And I actually will download this to my blogs on my website so that you can have it. And I've got the citations. So just to let you know, the authors I quoted were Hugo Black Jr., who wrote My Father, Christopher Wolfe, who actually cited a Gerald Bradley of Notre Dame from the Church-State Relationships in America. David Barton wrote Separation of Church and State, What the Founders Meant. And Mark Levin, Men in Black, How the Supreme Court is Destroying America. And then lastly, Hilmar von Campe, who I already told you about. So I will leave it at that. And as we say here on Nonsensical Nation, keep your head on a swivel and stay tuned.